Welcome to this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live, the show which ensures that you profit from your time spent here with experts, either through the industry insights, information, or simply learning from them. And today we have Tommy Ogden, co-founder and agility and analytics lead at Activera Consulting. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Thank you, AJ. Thank you so much for having me on.
You are welcome to the show, Tommy. You are welcome to India in this online form. And I'm sure not just in India, but a lot of people across the globe would benefit from what we are going to talk about. We are talking about this particular topic. People have heard about the word called consultant, but we'll talk about what makes a good consultant. So, Tommy, first to understand itself the basics of, you know, you are into this field. So, is the consultant word the same as it was 10 years back? How should we look at a consultant today? Many a times people don't take this word so nicely sometimes, but they do. So I want to understand a bit about who is a consultant in today's time.
Sure, absolutely. It's funny you say that. There's a lot of negative jokes or comments about lawyers, but it's the same is true for consultants. In fact, my grandfather used to tell me that a consultant was someone that you would hire to come into your business. They would ask you for the watch off your hand and then tell you what time it was. And that was his thought of what a consultant was. I mean, I think originally when it started with the McKinseys of the world, there was a lot of talk about strategic thought and best practices. And that's kind of how consulting was born and shifted and changed over time. I think nowadays people like a couple of things. One, they like the ability to ramp up and ramp down on a specific problem. They don't have to go through a hiring process and an extensive onboarding process and paying benefits and 401ks and all of that. They can just hire a consultant who can come in, solve a very particular problem, and then leave. But I think a second one that is interesting to a lot of folks is getting some insight into what peers in the industry are doing. So I'll give you an example. I'm with oil and gas and energy. That's typically the types of clients that we have. And one of our key clients is a super major in that arena. And they've got their own culture. They've got their own people. They're doing really well. But they would like to know what are their peers doing? What is a best practice over here? Have you seen not only from our peers, but from other industries, how we can go about approaching a problem effectively? And so that's another reason to bring in consultants.
Right, Tommy. Now, how should you know who is a good consultant or a bad consultant? Is it about his or her skill sets? Is it about the number of years they have spent in a particular industry? Many a times you see consultants are very young with less number of experience, you know, number of years of experience. So how do you know? See, big companies know about things, but then also they are wrong many a times. And those stories you can get to read in many papers across the world. So those things are, you know, after losing millions of dollars, they become a bit wiser about the money they have lost, not about the problem that they wanted to solve. So forget about that. So let's come to the lesser mortals. How do they know who is a good consultant, who is not so good consultant, and who might be a good consultant but not the right fit for them? Help people understand about this particular part of the difficult problem.
Absolutely. And I the way I bucket it, AJ, is in three different potential avenues for what good looks like in consulting. And those are reliability, credibility, and intimacy. And let me take those one by one. So a reliable consultant is one that will hit their deadlines. They do exactly what they say they're going to do. They do it with high quality and they do it consistently. So that is a reliable person. And that would make a good consultant. Secondarily, credibility, right? So are you a subject matter expert in a certain thing? So if I start talking to you, AJ, about cloud, right? Do you know about AWS? Do you know about Azure and Alibaba and Google Cloud, right? Do you know about on-prem versus hybrid and private cloud and public cloud? Do you know about cloud bursting, right? So that would make you more of an expert and you would have that credibility with companies. And the last one is a little different. I don't know that folks think about it as much. It's the intimacy aspect, especially when you're further on in your career and consulting, you're responsible for more business development and sales. And in order to do that effectively at a high level, you have to build a relationship, a personal relationship with people. It's not just about helping them solve a problem. It's about helping them in their careers. And to reach that trusted advisor status, you need to have intimacy. And I'll give you one quick example of that. I was with a client, I've been with him for 8 years, and he just called me the other day and he was asking me about the foundation on his house. It had nothing to do with what we were doing together at work, but he was calling for my advice just to see if there was something I knew about it or could point him in the right direction, provide insight, provide guidance. And so I consider that a marker of a trusted advisor status. And so I think you could be in any one of those three avenues, right? Reliability, credibility, intimacy. But a good consultant is going to have all three of those.
Right. Tell us a bit about your consulting journey, Tommy, so that you know how you were into a lot of other stuff before, and then you came to this particular position. So help us understand why this. Why not go and become a CEO of a big company? Why this? Help us understand what goes through somebody's mind who wants to be a consultant, a very young person. Earlier, it used to be considered, okay, somebody who has done a lot of things in their life. They have retired. They want to do now things at their own pace, at their own time, the way they want to. They want time for themselves. And so they would become a consultant more than that. But nowadays, things are changing very quickly. Help us understand about your journey. Through your journey, a lot of people will get a lot of understanding about this consulting business itself.
Sure, absolutely. So for me personally, I actually majored in college and undergraduate. I majored in Spanish. So I took Spanish, I took French, I took Portuguese. I loved romance languages. And so I just followed my passion. But the problem for me was, what am I going to do with that after school, right? I could be a translator, maybe a teacher. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I didn't have that focus, if you will. So I did a few different jobs, like you were just describing, AJ. And I realized to myself, you know what, in order to really progress in my career and figure out what I want to do, I need to go back to school. I had never heard of consulting when I went to business school, but the first semester, they essentially mandated a report that you had to create, an essay you had to write, where you had to go interview somebody in the business world and say, hey, I'd like to be like you in 10 years. And so it really makes you think, what do I want to be? What do I want to do? What are the options and possibilities? And that's where I discovered consulting. And once I heard about it and realized what it was, I knew that's what I wanted to be a part of. So I poured everything into consulting, got consulting certificates, started doing consulting classes, and I knew that's the direction I wanted to go. And so the why behind it, I think, is what you're asking. And for me personally, it was about helping other people. I really like assisting not only in problem solving and tackling really high level problems, but helping other people in their careers. Like I was talking about before, what makes a good consultant and a trusted advisor, because I do care about the clients that I work for. And you have to have that kind of mindset in order to really follow that passion of consulting. So I think it's, you know, partially just a passion of yours and interest. But then you also have to care about the other people that you're helping and that you're working with. So that was my journey, at least.
Right. Great. Great journey. You went to Big Four, entrepreneurship, and not earlier you talked about talking about Spanish. Then you had lots of certification, project management professional, scrum master, safe practice consultant, so many, all these things, MBA. You know, Master of Global Management in International Business and Consulting. That's how you build a career. You are not talking from anywhere but position of strength. But in terms of how do you become a trusted person, in terms of, you see, people, what are the expectations when people hire a consultant? Do they think, okay, it's a trusted person? Or do they hire for problem solving? How do they, and what do they expect? It's like, you see, when you have a problem, you are in your say motor vehicle, then you get a good mechanic so that he or she comes and does the work. Does it work the same way for a consultant? Because consultant will come with a lot of new things. They will need a bit of time to get to understand those things. Or are they like ChatGPT? They immediately understand the problem and start churning out solutions. So help us understand this aspect of consulting.
Absolutely. And that's a really great question, because there's a misconception around consulting. I would think, and I had the same misconception when I was in business school before I actually got into the consulting world, is that in order to be a good consultant, you have to be the smartest person in the room. Right? You have to know everything. You have to have all the answers. You're the answer man. That's not the case. That's not what clients are expecting. From my perspective, and what I've seen over the past decade plus of consulting work, is that clients want not only that third party perspective we were talking about in the initial discussion earlier, but they want someone who can come in and logically structure an approach to a problem. Okay. If you look at the McKinsey's of the world, the Bains and the BCG's and that, you know, the tier one guys, they don't have enough time in the interview process to determine whether or not someone has intimacy. Will they be a trusted advisor? You can't figure that out in an hour. Are they a super deep subject matter expert and they're extremely credible in all the nuances of cloud? I mean, you can look at someone's background and their work history, but you don't know that after an hour of talking to them. And what about the reliability? And maybe a proxy for that would be people's grades, right? If they have a high grade point average, maybe they're reliable. They do what they say they're going to do and they deliver high quality, maybe. But can you really figure that out within an hour? No, you can't. So what do those big companies do? They provide use cases, right? Those case studies, and they'll ask questions like, how many ping pong balls can fit in a 747 airplane? Or how do you price the ocean? Or how do you weigh an elephant without a scale, right? Those are the types of questions they ask in those case study interviews. And they're trying to find the best and brightest consultants. So what are they looking for? They're not looking for a specific answer, because there is no specific answer to that. What they're looking for is your ability to logically structure an approach to a problem. And if you can do that in the interview, then they will feel comfortable that you can do that at a client site. And it doesn't matter. You don't have to be a subject matter expert in cloud, but you have to be able to ramp up quickly. We call it drinking out of a fire hose. And you have to be able to present something to the client that is logical, that is structured, and something that they can all agree on. Yeah, this is the right direction. I get it. I understand where you're going. And let's co-create and solve this problem together. And so I think, I'm hoping I'm answering your question. That's what firms are looking for.
Indeed.
And that's what clients expect.
No, you have answered it very well. See, I don't know anything about these things. I understand it purely from a common person's perspective. And these things matter to a lot of common people. They want to understand these things. They want to understand how things work and how things go wrong when, in spite of taking millions of dollars for giving advice, and the companies lose a lot of money, and then there are jokes around. So those are about, you yourself have worked in this, big four firms. And so you know about the functioning. I'm sure they are doing a lot of good work, but then those stories people read and they form their own, impressions about things. One of the impression is, you know, that these consultants, they charge by the hour, and it can be very, you know, they earn a lot of money, but I don't know what sort of advice they give. How does it work actually on the ground, Tommy?
Sure. And I think that goes back to one of the earlier comments that you had made around why do people bring consultants in? Because there's a lot of different reasons why you might. Let's just say you want to do a big SAP implementation, S4HANA, right? You're going to put out a request for proposal, an RFP, which is a significant amount of work, a very high dollar amount, 3 to 5 year sort of implementation, right? So you're going to want expertise. You're going to want people who have done that before. You want them to prove that to you, that they know what they're talking about, so that you can avoid pitfalls and you can participate in best practices and learnings from the past. And so for something like that, that's so critical to your business processes and operations, right? You would likely want to go to a big company that has, you know, a wide array of skills, you know, something like a Deloitte or an Accenture or a Capgemini or a KPMG or EY or PwC. I mean, there's so many firms out there. So that's sort of one way of viewing it. But then there's other clients that don't have those large of problems. They have a very specific problem. And in that case, they don't need an RFP. They need somebody that they trust who's going to come in and work with them directly and allow them to soundboard, allow them to, you know, get those insights and that guidance on a more personal level on smaller problems. And in that case, there's no need to put out an RFP for something like that. You go with people that you trust and know will bring good folks to the table. And so I think there's a lot of different instances where consulting can be helpful, but it's really dependent on that use case or what you're trying to solve.
Right. Right, Tommy. Now, for a lot of, you know, for a lot of people, they have different choices. One is the large firms, then the smaller firms. And then there are 1 to 2 person companies they can deal with, small firms, where they think, okay, they may have less bandwidth, but in terms of expertise, like they can really provide value. But when it comes to, you know, thinking about hiring people, they swing between all these options. How would you like to, or what would you like to tell? You have a background of Big Four, but not everyone will have that. So what would you like to tell people who have got expertise, but in terms of evaluation, they may not be the first ones? So how can they make sure that in terms of choices that other their potential clients are making, they also stand in contention and that they are known as a good consultant? They can be a good asset for in problem solving for those companies. What should they do extra when they do not have the big branding like the big firms?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of it is personal. Okay. And I can speak from personal experience in this regard, because as you mentioned, AJ, I sort of started my consulting career in boutique management, which is like a smaller company. I was employee number 35, I believe, and we only grew up to about 100 people. Okay. And what happened with that boutique firm was we were actually acquired by Accenture, which was, you know, part of that Big Four that you're mentioning. And so not only have I seen the boutique side of the house, but I've also seen the Big Four side of the house. And then now I've started my own company with a few folks, co-founded Activera. And so I've seen the entrepreneurial side of consulting as well. And so I've got a unique vision of what each of those things actually means. And I think the answer to the question is really depending on your own personal culture. The reason why I left Accenture was because I really appreciate the smaller company feel. I like the community aspect. I like the camaraderie. I like the flat hierarchy, right? I know every single person and I can just pick up the phone and talk to the managing partner, right? That's not the case at an Accenture. There's levels of hierarchy and you sort of have to, you know, negotiate and politically maneuver throughout those types of firms. And some people thrive in that environment. They like that political jostling and they like responding to RFPs and selling multi-million dollar deals. But for me personally, that abstracts away that personal relationship that I have with clients and with my peers at the consulting firm. And so when I was thinking about it, AJ, before I started, co-founded this company, I was thinking, do I really want to spend the rest of my career at one of those big fours, right? Or do I prefer just personally, do I work better within this smaller type environment? And so everybody has to answer that question for themselves. I will tell you that at a larger firm, sometimes especially early career folks can get a little pigeonholed. They focus on, let's say, one module of an ERP system, and they become, you know, a subject matter expert in that, and they focus on that. But then every single job they get after that is like, oh, you know this module? Come over here and focus on that module. Oh, you know that module? Go over there and focus on that module. And you end up just becoming a cog in a much bigger wheel. Whereas if you're with a boutique firm or a smaller firm, you've got more sort of lateral movement, and you're going to be doing lots of different things because you have to with a smaller company like that. So I think at the end of the day, it really is personally dependent on how you want to interact with a company. And I wouldn't worry too much about, do you have experience at one of the big fours or not? Because it's really personally dependent.
Right, Tommy. Now, let's understand this word called framework. You talk about, you know, that client value can be, you know, accelerated. You can accelerate client value through frameworks. Help us understand what this framework thing is all about. I don't know about me. Well, for me, framework is a framework. That's it. But how does that come into consulting?
Yeah, that is a good question. And that's something I've been pondering for the last year or so. You mentioned I was the agile and analytics lead, but I also call myself the CFO, the chief framework officer, because I really value frameworks. When I graduated from business school and got into the consulting world, I was, to be honest with you, I was frightened. I was frightened because my biggest fear was I would roll onto a client engagement. They would approach me day one with a problem, and I would just freeze like a deer in headlights, you know, and I wouldn't know how to approach it. And so what I've found over the last decade plus of consulting is that you can use frameworks to help you overcome that problem. So remember when we were talking about the case studies with the McKinsey's and the Bain's and all that, and what they're looking for is a logically structured approach to a problem? Well, that's what a framework is. A framework is a pre-created template that allows you to logically structure an approach to a problem. So if that's what the best consultants in the world are being tested on to get into these big firms, then why wouldn't you utilize that in your day-to-day job? Even if you're not a consultant at a big four, right? You can leverage frameworks to logically structure approaches to problems. And so that's the connection point between framework usage and good consulting, or really just good business in general. And if you can figure out how to leverage frameworks, then you can progress your career and differentiate yourself from your peers. So let me give you just one quick example of a framework. And before I do that, I'm gonna talk about it on a spectrum, okay?
Right.
So what you don't want when it comes to frameworks is you don't want just a cookie cutter solution, right? Like let's say SWOT analysis, everyone's heard of that, right? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. You wouldn't want to take SWOT and just apply it to every single problem that you encounter, right? That wouldn't make sense because it's not fit for purpose, right? Alternatively, on the other side of the spectrum, you don't want to approach every single new problem from scratch. You don't want to reinvent the wheel because that takes up too much time and too much effort. What you want is something in the middle, something that's going to allow you to accelerate value for your clients while retaining that malleability, that uniqueness, so you can tailor it and make it fit for purpose, custom build it for that client and that particular problem. And that's what a framework allows you to do. And I told you, I'll give you an example. One framework that we use, I call it the prioritization framework, okay? Its real name is the impact and feasibility matrix, but nobody knows what that actually means. So I just call it the prioritization framework. If you've got a problem, if you encounter a situation where you need to prioritize some list of items, right, you can use this framework. And it's a little difficult to talk about it as opposed to showing it on the screen. But if you think about just a chart, right, with an x-axis on the bottom and a y-axis going up, well, that x-axis would be feasibility, okay? Low feasibility over here near the 90-degree angle and high feasibility on the right-hand side. Now going up the y-axis, you have impact, okay? Low impact next to the right angle, high impact up here at the top of the y-axis, okay? So what you're looking for in prioritizing those lists are things that are highly feasible, right? They're easy to do, you can get them done for sure, and highly impactful. And so they're gonna end up in the upper right-hand corner of that chart, okay? And so you talk about a list of things, you discuss it with a group of stakeholders, and you essentially plot each one of the ideas on the impact feasibility matrix. And that allows you to see, okay, which things are highly feasible and highly impactful that we should likely do first, right? Versus which things are maybe really impactful, but not as feasible, or things that are not feasible or impactful, and we can kind of ignore those for now. So again, it's just a framework, a pre-configured template that allows you to logically structure an approach to a problem. And that, if you bring that to bear in your day-to-day life, if you present something like that to your boss that makes perfect sense on how to approach the problem, then you're going to be differentiating yourself and you're going to be seen as a good consultant, right? Regardless of whether or not you're in consulting. And so that's why I really value frameworks, because they can bring that structure and logical approach.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, help us understand one more thing. Nowadays, we are hearing a lot of this word called fractional, chief fractional, you know, CMOs, chief marketing officer, fractional, FMO, all those things, everything fractional, either in terms of HR, in terms of marketing, in terms of, so is consultant, is a consultant and a fractional officer, is it the same thing, or are these two different things? Or now a lot of consultants are getting into this role. How do you see this?
Yeah. So my personal perspective is that they're slightly different. Okay. Typically, when you might want to bring in someone fractional is if you are a smaller to medium-sized company and you can't afford a full C-suite, right? Because you need that chief marketing officer, chief financial officer, the CISO, right? The information security person. You need operations officer, you need a CEO, right? You've got this whole C-suite that a large company can support, but a small to medium sized company, they can't afford full-time people in every single one of those roles. And so that's when they'll pull in a fractional CISO to answer any questions they might have about information security. A consultant is a little different. We actually have a service that we offer called CIO Advisory. And that's if you are a CIO, but you want someone to consult with around, hey, what are my peers doing around generative AI and large language models and ChatGPT you were talking about and RAG, right? Retrieval augmented generation. So we could come in and advise a CIO on what's happening in the industry. What are those trends? Look across their portfolio and say, hey, we think you should invest more here. You've got to reduce tech debt over here. This can be more run and maintain, right? But that's more of an advisory role. And so I would differentiate that from a fractional CIO in that regard, right? That you're just consulting as opposed to being the person responsible for answering the questions. I think that's the differentiation.
Right, right. Now let's come to your company, Actievera Consulting. Help us understand, what do you do there? How do you, what do you work in terms of, and what can people connect with you for?
Perfect. So Actievera Consulting is IT advisory for energy. That's our focus. And our vision statement is that we accelerate business outcomes. That is our main focus. And how do we do that? We do it through four different large buckets of services. The first is strategy work, right? So should I go and purchase this company, right? If you're looking at mergers and acquisitions, that would be something strategic that you could call us in for. Second one might be is execution. So it might be project and program management, whether that's traditional waterfall or also agile, Scrum, Kanban, SAFe, which you mentioned earlier, the scaled agile framework. So we can actually execute on that merger. So for example, you decide, hey, I want to buy this company. Well, they both have their own IT systems. How are you going to integrate those effectively? So that would be something we could provide in the execution realm. The third thing we do is change. Okay, so there's a whole set of skills around behavioral change management and organizational design. So taking that same example, if you're merging two companies, well, there's a lot of processes that are going to change. There's a lot of stakeholders, internal employees that are going to have to shift how they do their processes. And what you want as a company is to ensure that they're adopting the new processes as quickly as possible, so there's a minimal disruption on operations. And that's what a change manager can come in and help with communication, quick reference guides, you know, process changes. So that would be another one. And the fourth bucket is data and analytics. So we don't have data scientists and machine learning engineers, and we're not building predictive models. But what we do is some data engineering and then data visualization. So let's say you have those two companies that are coming together and there's different IT systems, right? Disparate IT systems. Well, we can bring all of the data together into a single spot and then put a single pane of glass through, let's say, Power BI, right? A front-end visualization to show metrics across all the different IT systems without having to, you know, decommission some and put them all into a single spot. We can use visualization for that. So those are really the four main buckets of work that Activera provides. And we have activeraconsulting.com. So if you want to take a look at the company website, you can do that there. And if you'd like to reach out to me, I'm at linkedin.com/Tommy Ogden. So it's my name, very easy to find. Or T Ogden, T-O-G-D-E-N at activeraconsulting.com.
Wonderful. With this, it's a wrap on this very special edition of the KAJ Masterclass Live. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you, AJ. I hope you have a great day.